What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.
This is Cruise Radio.
I cruise a lot, and I always sail with travel insurance. You should, too. Get a free quote today at tripinsurance.com.
Broadcasting from the tripinsurance.com studios in Jacksonville, Florida.
This is
Cruise Radio.
Cruise Radio.
Hey, how's it going? My name is Doug Parker. Thank you so much for checking out this episode of Cruise Radio. Very happy to have you here, my friend. Standing by with Cruise News is staff writer Richard Sims, and then on deck after Richard is Emma. She gives a review of the Celebrity Infinity, an 11-night cruise she did out of Athens. But first, Cruise News with Richard. Hey there.
Hey, Doug.
So we start off with the most talked about story of the week and how it's impacting the cruise industry.
You know, I have to say, when I first heard about the Baltimore Bridge collapse, basically, I woke up and you had sent me the video. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I thought it was some kind of fake. The kind of thing that people make that goes viral by tricking people into thinking it's real, to realize that this really had happened, and just in the blink of an eye was, I mean, just shocking. Beyond that, it's the kind of thing that is going to impact the city of Baltimore for, you know, a very long time. I will be fascinated to follow this story in the future. But it also it impacts the port and the cruise ships that sail out of there. Right now, there are two cruise lines that are actively sailing out of Baltimore this time of year. So it's the Carnival Legend and Royal Caribbean's Vision of the Seas. And as of right now, the current sailing of Legend is not going to be able to return to Baltimore. So they're going to return to Norfolk. And then Carnival will provide buses that are going to take people from Norfolk to Baltimore. And they will also be doing the same thing with the next group of passengers. I assume they will be taking them down to Norfolk. No idea how long this is going to have to go on. Royal, as we are recording this, Royal is still deciding exactly what they're going to do and how they're going to proceed. One thing that we know is that obviously this is going to be very disruptive to a lot of people. It's going to throw their vacation into a little bit of chaos. And, you know, all I can say is I really hope that everyone involved will be patient and understanding. I mean, this is an absolutely horrific situation. It's a developing story, you know. I can't even imagine how much it's going to mess with some people's vacations. You know, nobody wants to come back from their cruise and have to get on a bus and go from, you know, Norfolk to Baltimore. But, you know, just try and keep in mind that this is such a huge thing that's going to have a major impact on literally hundreds of thousands of lives in the Baltimore area. And that as much as it might inconvenience your vacation, you know, that's a small fry compared to what it's going to be in the long run for those people.
Yeah, in my mind, I'm just thinking about, you know, when a football team lands in a city and they have all those motor coaches, well, think of like 2,600 people coming off a cruise ship at probably 50 people on a tour bus. That's like at least 50 tour buses rolling down 95 and on Easter Sunday, probably hungover. It's going to be an interesting day for a lot of people.
I can't even imagine it. You know, I mean, I have trouble navigating, you know, I get annoyed by having to navigate the bus system at Walt Disney World, and that's nothing compared to what these people are going to have to do. And not only that, but think about from an operational perspective, you know, what the people at Carnival are having to do, and Royal Caribbean and others, no doubt, what they are having to do in order to arrange all of this. It's one thing to, you know, have your operational center say, okay, instead of Baltimore, can we make arrangements to get to Norfolk? And we need to get clearance for that. You know, they don't just get to go where they want to go. But then once we have arrived in Baltimore, we also have to have arranged for, you know, it's not like Carnival has a fleet of buses sitting around. You know, they have to arrange for all of these buses and rent them and get them. Yeah, nightmarish from a logistics point of view.
And as we mentioned, Royal Caribbean does not have plans yet for their cruises. Of course, Norwegian does have Sky sailing out of there later this year and nothing there as well. And American Cruise Lines does as well. So just if you're cruising on any of those four, just keep in contact with your cruise line. Meanwhile, Carnival is going all in on its very latest, very popular class of ship.
You know, they say go big or go home, and Carnival clearly has no intention of going home where these ships are concerned. So only a month after having announced a fourth Excel-class ship, Carnival has gone ahead and said, you know what? Let's get us a fifth of those. Sure, they cost $1 billion a piece, but they are definitely worth it. So this new ship, which, of course, is unnamed. I don't think we even know the name of the fourth ship, let alone the fifth one. It's expected to be delivered in 2028, so start saving now for that, you know, what will no doubt be a pricey inaugural. Like the other ships in this class, it's going to carry about 6,500 guests and 1,800 crews. 1,800 crew members. It's the same basic kind of format as the Mardi Gras, the Celebration, the Jubilee, and whatever the fourth in the class will be. It's actually the 11th Excel class ship that Carnival Corporation has, because they also have these ships sailing for their other brands, including AIDA and Costa and P&O. So, you know, this is, it'll be fun to keep an eye on this, because as we've seen with each of these new ships, there's been something different. You know, the Jubilee has that really cool Dr. Inks bar and that whole zone. So as more and more information is revealed, of course, we're already like speculating about what the fifth will have on it. I guess we should wait and see what changes will be introduced on the fourth first. But definitely, you know, they're making some big investments in these larger ships. And it's, you know, it'll be interesting to see how the other thing that we'll be watching is how does this impact the older ships? You know, over the last few years, we've seen Carnival get rid of some of the older ships as they have introduced these newer ships with bigger capacity, which means their inventory gets to go up. And they also can charge usually a higher premium for the newer ships than they can for some of the older ships. So, you know, might some of those kind of older ships in the fleet find themselves over the next few years being, I don't want to say pushed out the door, but, well, pushed out the door.
Isn't it mind-boggling when you think, okay, yeah, we think, oh, they're going to order another ship, but you're talking about a $1 billion cruise ship. And just if you go micro with everything from the steel you're going to need, the rolls of wire, piping, faucets, things like that. It's just, I can't wrap my brain around all this.
I agree. One of the things I really, really loved was Joe Farkas's book really kind of gets into the weeds on some of this stuff and how much planning goes into it. And it's got like great like ship schematics and things like that. If you're a fan of the industry as a whole, Carnival in particular, and Carnival's older ships, definitely, I highly recommend Joe Farkas's book, because it's just really, really, really the kind of thing that takes you behind the scenes and gives you so much information about things that you really probably don't normally think about, you know? Like you're saying, it's a lot of details into the wiring and all that that you just don't think about.
And this next piece of news comes from right here in Jacksonville, Florida.
Yeah, good news for you and anyone else who loves sailing out of Jacksonville, as Carnival just extended their arrangement with the port. They're going to continue operations out of Jacksonville through at least 2026, with an option to extend into 2030. Right now, the Carnival Elation, which is, talking about the older ships, this is one of only two fantasy class ships which are still sailing, and it is based out of Jacksonville. Here's an interesting little fact. Over the past 20 years, Carnival has had over 3 million passengers pass through the port of Jacksonville on their ships. Although, you know, they say 3 million passengers, but I mean, how many of those are basically you sailing over and over and over again? Because I know you sail out of that port fairly often.
Oh, yeah. It's, it's nice, though. I have a great view from it right here at my studio, downtown Jax. It's like literally probably 5 miles from here. And we're so high up that I could like see over the tree lines, and I could always see when the funnel's in port. So it's always good to come in. It's always a good working day when you can see a cruise ship funnel, you know?
You know, you're making it easier for people to stalk you. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I won't say what building, though. And finally, actually, the next to last story, we have a report about the 2019 incident aboard the Viking Sky, a very serious and scary one.
Yeah, it turns out that things could have been a lot worse. Not that they weren't pretty bad and downright terrifying for the passengers who were on board that particular sailing. But, okay, longtime listeners will recall that back in 2019, the ship was caught in really bad weather and it suffered a power outage. There was just this horrific series of events that took place. And passengers, about 400 passengers, wound up being airlifted off the ship before it was finally determined that the ship could operate on its own power and get back to port. Ever since, we've kind of been waiting for more information about how this happened. And we now know, thanks to a report from the Norwegian Safety Investigation Authority, that basically the ship should not have been sailing that day. What they reported was, and I quote, "The investigation identified operational, technical, and organizational safety issues that in different ways contributed to the blackout." So there were a lot of problems. But one big one was that the crew was not properly trained. There was a specific set of protocols that should have gone into place when the blackout occurred. And the crew was not prepared for that, and it did not happen. And so as a result, that contributed. And if you've ever looked at the videos from that day, whether on board or from the shore, there was a lot of it because they were so close to shore. They were within one ship's length of running aground, which could have made this, you know, even worse. It probably would have been more like a Costa Concordia type situation where, if you recall, 37 people died in the Costa Concordia incident. Mm-hmm. Luckily here with the Viking Sky, no one died. There were injuries. There were people taken to the hospital, but no one actually died. So it could have been worse. But, you know, to find out that, yeah, they shouldn't have even been sailing that day is both something we probably anticipated hearing and also something you sort of hate hearing because you just don't want to know that there was that lack of preparation where these important technical aspects were concerned.
And Carnival Freedom is 2 for 2. Break this down for us.
Ah, talk about a streak of bad luck. So you'll recall that about 2 years ago, it was in May, 2 years ago, Carnival Freedom had a fire on board in the funnel. And luckily, it was in port. No one was injured. Most of the passengers were on shore when it happened. But eventually, she had to go back into dry dock. And it actually took 17 months between the time when the funnel caught fire and when the funnel was replaced. So the funnel was actually only replaced in October of 2023. So, you know, just 4 or 6 months ago, whatever. Flash forward to last week, and literally flash, because by all accounts, based on witness accounts and what they've been able to gather so far, it seems as if the new funnel was hit by lightning. It caught on fire. Part of it fell down onto deck 10. Folks were kept indoors while the well-prepared and very well-trained crew who, you know, it's their job to take care of this, they managed to put out the fire and everybody was okay. The ship, at first, Carnival was kind of like, okay, we're going to be fine. It's not really going to impact us. We'll do what we did before. You know, we'll sail without that part of the funnel. But from the beginning, I think you and I both suspected that it wasn't going to be that simple. And as it turns out, it's not. They have had to cancel a couple of cruises while the ship goes back to Freeport for repairs. No word on exactly, are they going to replace it with a new funnel? I don't think that will happen immediately because, you know, we were just talking in the last story or the story before it about all the things that go into a cruise ship, you know, having the wiring and all that. Well, it's not as if they have some warehouse where they can call or they can't order on Amazon and say, hey, we need another funnel. Can you send another one over? Yeah, same ship. Crazy how that happens. So it's not like it can be replaced immediately, but the ship will go into dry dock. They will deal with the situation. And for right now, at least the next two sailings are canceled. We'll have to wait and see if it extends beyond that. I'm sure, you know, I'm sure people who are booked on the early April cruises are kind of like fingers crossed and hoping that they don't get that notification saying it's been canceled. But honestly, if I was on one of those early April sailings, I probably would prepare for the fact that it might not be ready to sail.
Real quick here, I want to throw this on you, but Carnival released their earnings this morning. Do you have anything in front of you?
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, it's kind of what we expected. Obviously, they're making money. The price of tickets is up. The onboard spend is up. There's been a real... That has been sort of the drumbeat of the last few years, is onboard spend being up. And that's for all of the cruise lines. They have really done, a good job or a bad job, depending on how you look at it, of getting more money out of people once they are on the ship. I think in the latest report, onboard spend was up something like 14%. One interesting thing that happened, even as they were preparing to release their statement, the incident happened in Baltimore. And, you know, your first instinct isn't to necessarily think, how will that impact the cruise line, since no cruise lines were involved in the incident. You know, it's not like a cruise line was plowed into the bridge. It was actually a cargo ship. But it turns out that, as we were talking about earlier, you know, they suddenly are facing this situation that they didn't anticipate. And they're estimating that it could impact in the foreseeable future, it could have an impact of like $10 million or more. So even as they were saying, you know, this is how much money we have made this quarter, this is what we're projecting moving forward, they had to sort of issue cautionary statements about how not only the situation in Baltimore will impact their future earnings, but also the unfolding situation in the Red Sea and what they have to do as far as cancellations or rerouting or, you know, whatever. So it was very good news, obviously, where their earnings were concerned, but they had to temper it a little bit with what might happen in the coming weeks.
Been doing this for 15 years, and this is probably one of the strangest news weeks we've had.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, I wouldn't mind if we had a week where all we had to report was, you know, hey, this port saw a record number of guests, mm-hmm. you know, those happy stories. This has been a weird week.
Yeah, for sure. Staff writer Richard Sims, as always, thank you.
Glad to be here.
Have a question or a comment for the show?
Yeah.
Send an email or voice memo to Doug@cruiseradio.net.
A big question we get at Cruise Radio is, how do I know if I need trip insurance? Simple answer. If you're getting on a plane, taking a road trip, or getting on a cruise ship, you need to have travel insurance. Hey, it's Doug Parker from my friends at tripinsurance.com. Not only does tripinsurance.com protect your vacation investment, but it also gives you peace of mind in case anything were to go wrong on your trip. How do they do it? They offer three different types of trip insurance policies. Good, better, and best. One policy for every vacation budget. But it doesn't just stop there. They're up to 40% lower when you shop around on other comparison sites. Plus, tripinsurance.com offers 24-hour customer support before, during, and after your trip, online claims assistance, and travel alerts to let you know what's going on at your destination. But find out for yourself. Check out tripinsurance.com.
Just back from a cruise? Let's talk about it. Email Doug@cruiseradio.net.
Our next guest is a familiar voice you might have heard before. Emma Cruises. Emma just returned from a 11-night cruise aboard Celebrity Infinity in the Mediterranean. She joins us on the line. How are you, Emma?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
It was good seeing you on Sun Princess last week.
I was so, just everything aligned and it worked out. That was not a plan of mine, but I'm so glad it happened.
Yeah, very cool. So I'm excited to talk about this ship. It's one of Celebrity's oldest ships, Celebrity Infinity, and it recently underwent a little bit of a renovation, we'll call it, although we don't really know exactly what they did, aside from adding some new carpet and stuff. But we'll get to that here in just a little bit. As we always do, though, we're going to take a step back. Give me some pre-cruise thoughts. Like, what made you want to take this 11-nighter out of Athens on Celebrity Infinity?
So I was spending winter in England, very, very cold, and I saw a very cheap last-minute cruise going from Greece with Celebrity, and I thought, this is my chance to see the sunshine again and not be cold. And I booked it just 2 weeks before the cruise. Mostly for the sun. And also I have cruised with Celebrity before, and I thought it would be just nice to get back on board.
Did you do any pre-cruise time in Athens?
No. So I flew in the day of the cruise, mm-hmm. Early in the morning, started my day about 3 a.m, 3-hour flight, got in a taxi, got straight to the ship. And we had maybe an hour before sail away, 2 hours most. So yeah, no time to see Athens.
So you go to onboard Celebrity Infinity. What is the embarkation process like there? Because I know there was actually like a pretty decent terminal where we embarked, mm-hmm. Sun Princess. Are you using the same terminal for the Celebrity Infinity?
I think we were Terminal A and you were Terminal B.
Okay.
But apart from that, it's the same, yeah. And it was so easy. If I was to say it took 5 minutes, I think that might be too high, because we'd already done all of the check-in before we got anywhere near the cruise port. So all we had was a QR code on our phones and our passports, and they were literally just checking that they matched. And I even watched the safety video on the plane when I was flying over, just to save time, because it was already there in the app.
Yeah,
there was almost no one there. There was a dog in the terminal just sitting amongst the security scanners, but that's Greece, dogs and cats everywhere.
Right.
But really, really easy.
You make your way on board Celebrity Infinity. Now, I know you've sailed a few celebrity ships in your time. So what were your impressions of this one?
It was interesting because I cruised most recently on Celebrity Edge, mm-hmm. which is a much bigger, much newer celebrity ship. But it's still, walking into that ship, I could still see that Celebrity Edge came from that. You know, I could see, oh, this atrium is not quite the same. It's much smaller. You know, it's all sort of 2001 wood colored, orangey wood. But I could still see that this was a celebrity ship. There was no question about that.
Yeah, it has like where the staircase descends down into like the atrium. It kind of is very reminiscent of the newer ships as well. They kept that design throughout.
Mm-hmm. It was kind of what I expected from a ship from 2001.
Yeah.
You know, I try not to do too much research before I go on a cruise just because I do want to be surprised by it. But I have cruised on other cruise line ships from that age, and it was sort of, it doesn't have the bright colored carpets that they used to have in 2001, but it's very sort of, just very wood was the main theme, wood colored everywhere, but it didn't look damaged. You know, there was nothing leaking. It didn't look run down. It just looked like a ship from 2001, which yeah. she is.
Fair enough. So on this 11-night cruise, you mentioned it was a last minute deal you snagged. So mm-hmm. what kind of stateroom did you book, and what were your thoughts of it throughout the 11 nights?
So I booked a balcony cabin, and I was also cruising with my brother, who was solo. I've heard a lot recently people saying Celebrity are charging double or something for solos, but even for him, it was a really good price. They must not be doing that for all of their itineraries. I think this itinerary, it was originally supposed to be Israel and Egypt. Obviously, they changed that. So I guess some people left, and that's the reason this cruise was so cheap. But I booked a balcony cabin because I wanted the sunshine. I do cruise in inside cabins all the time, but it's been a long, cold winter, and most of my trips that I've taken have been to colder places. So I thought, I'm going to upgrade. It was not much. I think it was maybe £200 for 11 days to upgrade. So
yeah.
I did it.
Talk to us about that 2001 stateroom as far as technology. Did it have the USBs or anything?
Not so much. I mean, if you looked at a picture from 2001 and then you looked at a picture from now, the only difference really is they've obviously changed the carpets, they've mm-hmm. changed the curtains, they've changed the bedspreads. I think they might have had USBs, but I've moved on to USB-A now, so USB-Cs aren't useful to me anymore. But it was that orangey wood that, I don't know if you know what I mean by the sort of color of orangey wood that is really 2000s, but it was that. There's nothing they can do about that. They can't change all the colors.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if you look at it, you can tell it's a cabin from 2001, but it wasn't broken. You know, I think I would much prefer a cabin that is old in color, but is clean and is not damaged. You know, I've been on cruise ships that are 10 years younger, but things are ripped and things are damaged, and there was nothing like that.
Did you find that the bathroom was adequate space and enough like luggage storage? I know you were sailing solo, but
yeah, I think the older cabins normally have more storage. That's what I found. Plenty of storage, a shower curtain. I know some people really don't like the shower curtains, but it was fine. I've had much smaller bathrooms on other cruise ships.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty standard, yeah.
Let's talk about the dining on this 11-night cruise, and we'll start mm-hmm. at the top in the buffet area, which I believe Celebrity calls Ocean Cafe, at least on some of their mm-hmm. ships. So how was the buffet on this one?
Yeah, it was good. It was really quite big for how many people were on this ship. Our cruise was definitely not full. I think it was around 75% full from mm-hmm. me just listening to the cruise director say a number and me overhearing conversations. But it went around both sides of the cruise ship, and I've definitely been on ships that have had double the number of passengers, but a smaller buffet. So I think if I had to describe the actual food there, fresh is the main word I would use. You know, if you wanted to have some salad with some peppers, you can have green, you can have yellow, you can have red. They're all cut up for you. They're all already there. If you want an omelette, they'll make it. If you have a salad, they'll make it. I came away feeling like I've eaten quite well on this cruise, healthily, which was good.
Gosh, 75% capacity sounds like a dream these days.
It's so good. It was just like those weird cruises we took after the pandemic, but with none of the bad things.
Yeah.
It's the ideal situation.
Nice. The main dining room, what time dining did you have here on, and how was your food and service throughout the 11 nights?
So I did the flexible dining. I don't know what celebrity call it, but I'm someone who likes to dine very early. So I normally booked my table for 5:30, and that's perfect for me. I know that's not for everybody. That seems very early. But that meant that I could go to dinner at 5:30 and then still be done by the 7 p.m. show. And that suited me great. The service was very good. It was pretty fast. The bread was very good. They always had different butters and dips. And the food, I think the starters got quite repetitive after 11 days. There's only one main dining room on board. And they had snails for starter every single day, which if you love eating snails, this is the dream cruise line, but I don't. But all the food was good. We never had any complaints about anything, really. So, overall, pretty good.
Does Celebrity have, is the app utilized on these older ships, like the newer ships with the dining and the checking in and everything?
Yeah, it's everything you would do on the new ships is the same. We would book dining. We would check our onboard account, daily schedules on there. You can message other people as well, which is pretty nice. I know some cruise lines still charge or have charged for that in the past, and it worked quite well. Yeah.
How about any specialty dining venues you may have hit up over the 11 nights?
I did not do any. And I didn't feel the need to be honest. I think I have done most of them before on Celebrity cruises. But I just didn't feel the need to on this cruise, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't really the point. The point was just chilling out, sunshine. I couldn't finish all of the menus. You know, they change every single day. So, I was more than happy. I didn't feel like I needed to go to any of them.
Well, how about this? Any kind of maybe snack areas where you could, you know, grab and go, or maybe by the atrium, by the pool, anything like that on board?
Yeah, so they have, a poolside grill, the standard things, the burgers, the fries, the hot dogs, and possibly the place I went to most is a cafe that's in the atrium where they have cupcakes and cookies and slices of cake. And I stopped there so many times on the cruise just to pick up a cookie, take it back to my room. That was good. That was nice.
Let's talk about the entertainment on this 11-night sailing. Now, I know that these European and Mediterranean cruises are very port intensive, so they typically don't have a lot of late night stuff going on board these ships. But how was the entertainment throughout your voyage?
Yeah, it was good. It was very sort of what you think of when you think of a classic production show in the theater, you know, singing and dancing. There's a magician, there's a comedian. There was all of those classic cruise things. And the shows in the theater were different every single day, which I really like. So I do like going on the new exciting cruise ships, but often they'll have one signature show. There wasn't a signature show. You know, there's no Broadway style anything, but it's a different show every single night in the theater, which I liked. They did actually have quite a lot more nightlife than I thought, and I didn't see much of it because, as you say, it's quite a port intensive itinerary. We had 2 sea days, which I think was pretty good for an 11 night cruise, but they had a lot of game shows, and it was interesting because we were good at the game shows, and our cruise was quite split between people from the UK, people from the US, people from Canada, and almost always the only people that volunteered were not the Brits. Like you wouldn't know that we were on board. It was really weird. I don't think we like audience participation so much, but it was great. I loved watching it. It was brilliant. Lots of trivia, loads of live music. The downside of cruising at this time of year is there's no guarantee it's going to be sunny, but we did pretty good. And there were, I don't know, maybe 3 big lounges on board. I think if you look at the difference between ships from 20 years ago versus now, back then it was very cool to have a very big lounge and a very big main dining room. And if you look at the newer ships, it's more 4 smaller restaurants and intimate lounges, but this had huge ones. So we could add 10 seats everywhere we went, to be honest, because we just could have. It was awesome. I loved it.
I know these med sailings don't have a lot of sea days, but during your sea days, how were they as far as crowds and congestion?
It was not busy at all. Helped by the fact, of course, that it was about 75% full.
Sure.
But I don't think there was any time that I couldn't get a seat in the buffet, which on some cruise ships, that can get quite tricky at peak lunch or peak dinner. But there was never one time where I went into a bar and left because I couldn't get a seat. Never.
What is celebrities' casino situation like? Do they allow smoking in there?
They do, yes.
Okay.
And I think it's kind of in the middle of the ship, but it can be avoided. Mm-hmm. So if you don't like the smoking, you don't have to go through it. But yeah. I went through it quite a lot because it was in the middle of the ship and it was just easiest. Not that I mind the smoking.
All right. You're really going to have to think about this next one because we're going to talk about the ports of call. This was an 11-night cruise. You hit quite a few of them. So what we'll do is give us the port of call. Give us your highlight. Then you can move to the next one.
Okay. So please forgive my Greek pronunciation. I don't know how to pronounce most of these ports. But the first place we went to was Thessaloniki, and we had 2 days there, which was really good. So we had an overnight straight away. The first day was pretty rainy, so I was thinking to myself, did I come all this way and just bring the English weather with me? I hope not. But the second day we had more sun. We went in an old tower. We found some ruins, as you do just wandering around Greece, and I'm pretty sure we left a couple of people behind in Thessaloniki. Yep, but that happens on cruises sometimes. The next place we went to was Kousadesi. I think that's how I say that. The main thing to do there is to go to Ephesus. I've already been there. That's like a 2,000-year-old library. Very cool. But we decided to stay closer. It was nice. It's a small place. You know, it's not massive, but the sun was shining. It was easy to walk around. Lots of things to buy. So that was good.
Emma, tell us you bought a rug.
I didn't buy a rug. But if you do any tour to Ephesus, they will take you to the rug factory. And I've been there before. And I've done some early morning tours there. And they sort of give you a glass of wine at like 10 in the morning, try and sell you a rug.
Oh, my God.
But people buy them.
The reason why I asked you that was just because I did the Ephesus tour when we were in Kousadesi. And we actually, we were beat. We did Ephesus on your own. So we're walking around sweating all day. And we get back on the tour bus. Like, okay, good. I'm going to go take a shower and grab some food. Oh, we're going to take you by a rug factory now.
So yeah,
we get the you know, they roll out which I thought was going to be maybe one or two rugs, like 30 rugs, and then the Turkish coffee is coming, and the rolls and the spritz and all this stuff, and people are buying $6,000 to $10,000 rugs who are on my excursion. I'm like, wow, this actually works.
Yeah, it does. It really does. It's not for me.
Yeah.
And I think now I've been to that rug factory, I don't need to go back again.
Right, exactly. But, so anyway, where did you go next?
We went to Limassol in Turkey, somewhere I'd never been before. So that was really nice. And the interesting thing for me about celebrity is they put on shuttle buses just for free because they're a more premium cruise line. I'm very used to cruising with budget lines like MSC, and this shuttle bus, they would charge $10 or $15 or something like that. So that was very nice. A nice sort of seafront, lots of souvenir shops selling shells and stuff like that. It was really cool. Then we went to Rhodes. And in Rhodes, it's like a walled city, a very, very old city. Very different to be there this time of year versus in summer. I've been in summer before. And in summer, some of those very picturesque streets, you have to go with the flow. You can't go against the flow because there's so many people. But it wasn't like that at all because we were cruising out of season, and I would recommend it so much. If you have the chance, if you're okay with it not being so warm, go this time of year. It's brilliant. And then we went to Crete. This was more of a sort of city. I think I bought some Pepsi Max and stuff like that. I saw even some shops that we have in the UK that was a bit strange, but Crete's pretty nice. And then we went to a surprise for me, which was Nafplio or Nafplion. I'm not sure how to say it, but that was a tender port. That was our only tender port that we had on the cruise. And again, I didn't have to wait for a tender because, I mean, I'm not the person who rushes up for the first hour, leave it an hour or two, just go straight on, walk straight on. It was amazing.
Love it. Was that your last port of call?
Yeah, that's it. Then we had back to Athens and we had an overnight in Athens. So that's when I went on Sun Princess for the day, just...
Because you had an overnight in Athens, what time do you roll into Athens?
We were in 7 a.m. and we had the full day in Athens and then the next day disembarked. So yeah, it was a proper 2 days in Athens.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. That was good. I mean, I was on Sun Princess at like 9 in the morning or something. It's awesome.
Yeah, is it the same way we did on Sun Princess, where you're stepping off the gangway right there on the ground level and just kind of going through?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. Yeah, the Celebrity Infinity is only 12 decks high anyway, which I know that's still a lot, but compared to some of the big ships, to me that felt pretty small. So even when we got on the ship, we'd only have to walk up a couple of decks to our cabin, so that was good.
I'm acting like I got off the ship in Athens. It was actually Rome we got off the ship in, but it's good to know for next time.
Well, I got on there, and it sounded like what you're describing. So
yeah. All right, so you're off the ship. Any tips to offer anyone sailing the Med or Celebrity Infinity?
I mean, my recommendation would be about going out of season. If I can stress something, it would be how good it was to go when we were not in any places with any other cruise ships. I've been to places before in Greece, like Santorini, when there were six other ships and my ship. Not all huge ships, a couple of huge ships, a couple of small ones, but it is so different to go when it's not peak time. And it's so much better. So peak time for the Mediterranean would be July, August. That's when, you know, our schools are off, so the kids are around. If you can go the sort of shoulder season, September, October, or even, you know, I've cruised the Mediterranean in January, December. They cruise year round, and it's brilliant. That'd be my top recommendation. As far as Celebrity goes, I mean, I think if someone has cruised on any Celebrity ship, they would recognize this ship. Obviously, there's not like the big garden on the top that they have on a lot of Celebrity ships, but it's very similar. I always say, you know, if you're on a Celebrity cruise and you hear someone singing a song, it'll be like the song is originally by a man and now it's sung by a woman, but it's faster and you're not really sure what it is. It's a bit quirky and a bit trendy. That's what I think. And it's the same on all the Celebrity ships.
Yeah.
As long as you don't mind that this is, you know, a bit more dated in color, but that really doesn't matter to me. I think they did a lot of good things when they built ships about 2001. I think it was a good year for ships.
No, I feel the same way. Put me on an older ship like a Carnival Fantasy class, Norwegian Sky or Sun, or even back when Royal Caribbean had them, that was a Sovereign class. Like, yeah, all the way. Loved them.
Yeah, I think sometimes you have more space per person on older ships. I think a lot of the new ones, they see a corner and they're like, great, I can put a go-kart track there, or I can put a surfing simulator or something in every space. And it's not like that on older ships. You know, if you want to just sit, which a lot of cruising is just sitting by the pool or just sitting in a lounge and just doing trivia or just those things, I think they're really good for that.
Looking back, what was the biggest highlight of this cruise for you?
It was just not being cold. It was so nice. Some of the places we went to, there were real, real surprises. I had been to some of the ports before, but places like the Nafplio, I still apologize if that's not how you say it. It was just such a lovely place. When I was there, I was thinking, I could move here. Why don't we just move here? It's so nice.
Final thoughts of Celebrity Infinity.
I loved her. I really like her. When I went on Sun Princess, obviously, people are saying, you know, oh, this ship is so new and impressive. And now you have to go back to your little old ship. And I was like, well, I don't mind. I quite like her. So, yeah, I was very impressed. I think they've really looked after the ship. I never saw, you know, I've been on cruises before where I've seen leaks in the theater coming out the ceiling on the seats, and there was nothing leaking, there was nothing broken. They've really looked after the ship. And on a small ship, you get to know the entertainment team, you know, the cruise director, you see them every day. I would really recommend it. Yeah,
very nice, Emma. Thank you so much for sharing this review. If we'd like to catch any of your coverage from Celebrity Infinity, where can we find that?
Yes, if you head to emmacruises.com, just search for Celebrity, you'll see all of my pictures, everything I ate, the places we went to, and you'll get to see the cabins and the colors of the wood and the things we've been talking about in this podcast.
You could also check out her YouTube channel at Emma Cruises. Emma, always great talking to you.
Thank you for having me. This has been fun.
All right, Dougie, let's see what we got for you, buddy. Cruise Radio is produced at the TripInsurance.com studios in Jacksonville, Florida. Get cruise news, ship reviews, and money-saving tips every Thursday on Cruise Radio. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show. If you want to help spread the word, give Cruise Radio a 5-star review. Find Cruise Radio where you listen to your favorite podcast or online at cruiseradio.net. I'm your announcer.
You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with a velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles, and that imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. Participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.